Hi, I'm Bill Corcoran Jr., and I'm your host for the On the Stacks podcast. Today, I'm chatting with Will Beekman, general manager of the Mohegan Sun Arena. What's up, podcast? Episode 23. Welcome to the On the Stacks podcast. Will, how are you?
Hey, Bill, how are you? Good to be here.
Yeah, great. Thanks for joining me today. I know there's a lot going on in your world, in the entertainment world, and up at the Mohegan Sun Arena. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But I'd like to start with a little bit about your background. So you're a facility manager, a talent buyer, and a live event marketer, according to your LinkedIn, I think. That's where I stole that from, yeah. By the way.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about you. You're a Penn State grad, which I'm really happy about because so am I. Yeah. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm originally from not too far from here. I grew up in the Poconos, went to Pocono Mountain High School, and I did attend Penn State. I actually am a two-time graduate because I got two bachelor's degrees from Penn State, the first in 2000 and another one in 2002. And it was after getting that degree in 2002 that I kind of moved back to this area from State College, and I had an internship at the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. They were just in their second year, or about to enter their third year, as a team here in Wilkes-Barre, and so I got on board there pretty early. It was, you know, a really exciting time. This team was new. They were, you know, they were winning. They were going to the playoffs. The building was packed every night. You know, it was a really good time, and that was kind of my introduction to more or less the live event world. And I hung out there for about 6 years, and then actually moved back to State College to take a job at the Bryce Jordan Center, and I stayed there for three more years. And it was out there that I really got introduced to more of the concert industry and, you know, the live events, kind of outside of the sporting world.
So when you interned with the Penguins here in Wilkes-Barre, and what did you do there? And you worked there for, I'm guessing you got a job obviously right after the internship.
Yeah, so don't ask me how I got to this point, but my degrees were in English and journalism. So I actually got my first job at the Penguins interviewing players in the locker room and writing feature-style stories for their game program, you know, which afforded me an opportunity to you know, kind of hang out with some of the players, and there was some, you know, good young talent at that time. If you go back that far, you'll remember Pittsburgh as an NHL team wasn't all that good at that time. So they were getting a lot of the good draft picks each year, and they were coming through Wilkes-Barre. So it was an exciting time. You know, I really enjoyed it. And while I was there, when the team wasn't in town in the off season, there was no one to interview. They had to keep me busy somehow. So I started working in the marketing department a little bit. I met who was now my wife while working there. And, you know, kind of moved into more of the marketing world. And then when I eventually left there and went to State College, that's what I did. I was the marketing manager at the Bryce Jordan Center.
So what exactly did you do there?
It was really just trying to put butts in seats. You know, they were obviously booking the building, and then it was up to the marketing department to try to sell tickets. You know, that was really it in a nutshell. You know, I answered to Bernie Punt, who was the longtime director of sales and marketing out there at Bryce Jordan Center, who recently retired but was there from the day the building opened. And I learned a ton from him and from other people there over my 3 years, and some of them are really good friends of mine. They ended up being, you know, at my wedding a few years later, and I still talk to all of them.
Really cool. So I bet that was probably a tough gig, though, selling.
It wasn't. It wasn't. You know, it was. It's like anything else. You know, it's a funny market out there because, you know, how big the market is when it's in. You know, when school's in.
Yeah.
And then when everyone goes away, or a lot of people go away for the summer, it's a totally different market. You know, so you kind of, it's like you're selling to different crowds depending on the, you know, the time of year, but it's like anything else. You know, you bring in the big name and it sells, and you bring in those that are kind of on the fence there, and you have to work hard to sell tickets. And so, it's the same thing here.
So when you were at the Bryce Jordan Center, that's really when you got into the more music end of the business, is that right?
Yeah, and that's really ultimately where I wanted to end up.
Okay.
You know, I've always been a music lover. My father is still one of the, and all the, if you consider all the concerts I've seen now through the years, my dad is still probably the best guitar player I've ever seen play live. I grew up listening to him. He would write his own songs, and he never really took them out in public, but would sing them in the house on the edge of his bed. And I just grew up listening to him, and that's really where the music love came from. And I found out pretty early on that I don't have any of those skills that he has.
Neither do I. So,
but I wanted to be involved somehow. So this is kind of, you know, my back door, if you will, into, you know, the music industry, and I love it.
How many concerts have you seen to date? You got to know the count, or at least an approximate.
I honestly couldn't tell you, but it's funny. You know, I feel like I've actually seen more concerts before I got into the industry. I've attended more concerts while I'm in the industry, but you don't see much.
You don't
of them.
See them when you're there. Because you know, you're backstage.
Everyone's always like, "You're so lucky. You get to see all those shows." And you know, we just had three great events in our parking lot a couple days ago, and I saw none of it.
Yeah.
You know, I saw the stage go up, I saw it come down, and I really saw nothing in between, you know?
Yeah. So I want to talk about that in a couple of minutes, but before we do that, so after Bryce Jordan Center, you were at the Kirby Center in Wilkes-Barre, right?
Yeah. So I'd gotten married to, you know, my wife, who I met while I was at the Penguins. When I left the Penguins to go take the job at State College, she followed me out there. We got married while we were out there, and then a few years later, we realized we wanted to start a family, and we realized this was home to us, and we wanted to do it back here. You know, a great place to live, work, and play, I always say. So we tried to find a job back this way. I felt bad for her because she left her job at the Penguins to follow me out there, and then a few years later, I left her out there when I got the job here at the Kirby Center. But then, you know, she was lucky enough to find a job here
great.
A few months later as well. So yeah, I started at the Kirby Center. It was 2010 as their director of marketing. And a few years later, was named executive director.
Very cool. So, what all did you do there?
You know, it started the same thing, really trying to sell tickets. And then, you know, my heart was always in the booking side of it. I wanted to start booking shows and buying the talent. And I really had no idea how to do it, but I wanted to learn. And when I got to the Kirby Center, they had someone already doing that. And that person ended up leaving. And Marilyn Santarelli, the executive director at the time, came to me and said, "Hey, did you do any booking at the Bryce Jordan Center, and do you want to fill in at least for a little bit until we find someone else?" So I was quick to lie and tell her yes. I had done a lot of it, you know, at the Bryce Jordan Center because I wanted that opportunity. And I figured I'll kind of jump, so to speak, and figure out how to fly on the way down. So that was kind of my in to learning how to talent buy. And
so how'd you do it?
I called a good buddy of mine, Bob Nosek, who used to actually work at and at one point ran the arena here as well. He had since moved on and was running a theater in North Carolina, and I called him and said, "Hey, listen, I just took over as, you know, the programming guy here, and I have no idea what to do." And he said, "All right, listen, there's a booking conference down in Miami in a week. See if you can get them to pay for you to come down here. I'll meet you down here. We'll hang out for the week. I'll tell you everything that I know, at least." So that's what I did, and that's where it really all started, and just been kind of learning as I go.
Very cool.
It's definitely something that, you know, I'm still learning and still getting better at. You need thick skin because you're going to bring in shows that make you a lot of money, and you're going to bring in shows that, you know, lose you a lot of money. But, I end up being awake at night quite a bit, you know, worrying about, you know, is this show going to sell or not? But I wouldn't change any of it.
So like, why is that? Like, you know, you say some make money, some lose money. Why?
Because they don't give you a crystal ball with this thing, you know, and it's tough, especially I think in this market. You know, there are things that, for whatever reason, you know, you can do all the research in the world and try to make the most educated guess on whether or not a show is going to work in this market. You can look at what it's done in other places, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, that's just kind of the business that we're in. You know, some shows do better than others, and, you know, it's kind of a complicated process. There are times that I've, you know, booked a show through an agent that I didn't really think would do all that well here, but I also knew that agent had another act that I really wanted to book and would do well, and that was kind of my in to building that relationship with that agent to hopefully get that other artist down the road, you know.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So after the Kirby Center, you moved on to the Mohegan Sun Arena, and you haven't been there that long, right?
No, just over a year. It's been an interesting first year.
I was going to say, boy, you really got thrown to the wolves, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and it was a tough decision, first of all, just to leave the Kirby Center. I had been there almost 10 years, and we did a lot in that time. I certainly grew a lot, and I think we as an organization grew quite a bit. We went from doing, you know, maybe 50 events, you know, in a busy year to doing about 150 events
Wow.
when I left. So we were all really tired. I'm sure there were a lot of my coworkers who were happy I was leaving because they could take a breather maybe for a little bit. But I had a lot of fun there for 10 years. It was a hard, hard decision for me to move on to the arena. And I always tell the story that, you know, my wife and I, we'd gone out to dinner one night, and I still wasn't sure what I was supposed to do as far as this decision goes. And she wasn't going to help me, she said. She said, you know, it needs to be you know, you need to know for yourself that this is what you want to do or not. She's like, I'm really not going to try to sway you one way or another. And we just started talking, and I started telling her a story about how when I was an intern at the Penguins and then my first couple years working there, it was my job as the guy at the, you know, the bottom of the ladder, so to speak, to take the Dodge Durango that they had, which was wrapped with Penguins, you know, logos, to the car wash before every game. And I would, everyone would leave the office to go to the arena, and they would eat their media meal and get ready for the game. And I would have to take this Durango to, you know, the car wash, and I'd have to get it washed, and I'd take it over and drive it up on the curb. And I did that for a couple of years. And I told her, you know, all these years later now, I can run that arena that I used to have to drive up on the curb with this car. And to me, that's
clean
kind of
car.
To me, that's kind of cool, you know. And she said, it sounds like you made your decision, you know. And that's when I, you know, again, it was difficult, but that's when I informed the Kirby Center I was going to be leaving.
Wow, very cool. So yeah, so what has it been like this past year, you know, with the whole, you know, you said, like you said, you've been there less than a year, about a year, and, you know, COVID hit 6 months ago or however long it's been.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's going on now?
Yeah, you know, I felt it, the timing wasn't great, although there's never really a good time for something like this to happen. But I felt like the first few months I was spinning my wheels a little bit, just getting used to, it's kind of the same job, but it's also different. Obviously, you're going from selling 1,800 seats to selling up to 10,000 seats. And I felt, at least from a programming standpoint and from a booking standpoint, I was spinning my wheels a little bit. I wasn't getting all the content at the arena that I was getting at the Kirby Center. But I knew it was just a matter of time. And then we finally started to hit our stride, and we were booking shows, and we had a great 2020 lined up. And I felt like we were finally off and running. And then, you know, March 12th, everything just came to a halt. And since then, we have canceled or postponed 40 events.
Wow.
We've refunded. We open our box office every day, and the money just goes in the other direction, because people are just coming up not to buy tickets, but to get their refund on, you know, shows that they had purchased tickets for prior to this. So we've given back about $2.7 million in tickets since the middle of March. So it's been a rough go of it. I sleep a little bit at night telling myself that it's obviously beyond our control. It's not just us. It's affecting everybody. But, you know, we all just want it to be over. And, you know, it's not a good time to be in the business of mass gatherings, that's for sure.
So, but you guys recently did just have a couple outdoor shows.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about those. You had the concert first, right?
Yeah, so we had two concerts, and then we had a comedian. So we had a benefit concert on Thursday the 16th of July, which was you know, a benefit for a lot of other smaller venues and arts organizations in our area. And then we had a great Queen tribute act on Friday the 17th, and then we had Jim Gaffigan kind of wrap things up in style on Saturday the 18th. So, you know, I had booked the Queen tribute act and the Gaffigan show first, and then Joe Nardone from Gallery of Sound came to me and said, listen, while all those fancy lights and screens and the stage is all set up, why don't we try to do one more show on Thursday? Maybe we can bring in some great local bands that we have, because we're so lucky to have so many talented musicians in our area. They're all willing to play for free. They're going to donate their time, and we're going to try to raise some money for some of these organizations. So, you know, I give Joe credit for that. But yeah, it started three really busy days for us. And really the busyness started, you know, well prior to that, because we decided we were going to do this. And then we all kind of looked at ourselves once Gaffigan confirmed and said, okay, there's no turning back now. We got to figure this out. You know, and we had put into the Gaffigan's the offer that we sent him that, you know, we could sell up to 1,000 cars. And at that point, we didn't, I felt kind of comfortable that we could do that. But I didn't even know if we had, you know, a room for that many cars, because we still had to figure out how we were going to do all this. So, you know, the team, I can't say enough about the job that they did. We literally walked that parking lot for weeks with measuring tapes and, you know, creating like human protractors to try to figure out, you know, where do we park the cars and how many can we fit? You know, we knew that in its, when it's used for its traditional purpose, the parking lot can hold 2,500 cars. But when you're putting a stage there and you're trying to put the cars in such a way where you're leaving spaces for social distancing, you know, how many can we fit? And luckily we could fit about 1,200, we found out. Wow. You know, it's a little bit more than I had thought, but it took a lot of work. It was a lot of fun.
And you had to figure all this out in a real short time span,
Right? Yeah, it was, I think Gaffigan was on sale the longest out of the three, and it was still on sale for only like 4 weeks. You know, normally you want to give yourselves 8 weeks, so we try to sell an event. So we had about half of that time and a lot to figure out during that time. But, you know, all's well that ends well. I can't say enough about, you know, the staff and the job that they did. It was a lot of work. You know, we knew going into it, it wasn't going to make or break our season and the budget. You know, that's already, you know, we waved bye-bye to a good year a long time ago, you know, when we canceled 40 events. But, you know, we just wanted to do something to put some people back to work for a few days and just to kind of bridge the gap.
Not COVID.
Just
got to announce that.
Just to kind of bridge the gap between where we were prior to March 12th and where we're hoping to be, hopefully one day soon.
Yeah, so a little bit about Jim Gaffigan. How did that come about? I think I saw you posted on your Facebook page, Douglas Edley and the United Talent Agency. So Douglas Edley, I know the Edley family, great family from NEPA here. How did the whole thing come about?
Yeah, so first of all, Doug and I had been working together for a couple of years before I put two and two together and realized who he was and who his family is. We had done multiple shows together. We had done a couple of, you know, Brian Regan shows together. And then he called me one day and said, do you want to do Sebastian Maniscalco at the Kirby Center? And I knew that I knew a couple things about Sebastian. One, he was the hottest selling comedian out there. And that normally his dates were being done by major promoters like, you know, Outback Presents out of Nashville or Live Nation. So first of all, I said, yes, I'd love to do it. Secondly, I said, why are you calling me to do it and not having a promoter bring it in? And he said, I just figured I would throw my hometown a bone. And now this was after working with him again for several years. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you didn't know I'm from Kingston. I said, I had no idea. He said, my family rented out the Kirby Center's lobby for my high school graduation. And I had no idea. So
you had no idea he was from...
I never put two and two together. Oh, okay. I knew Neil, you know, yep. I knew at least, you know, their mom, Fran's name,
yep. Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't put it all together. And then it all kind of came full circle and I realized what was going on. But
and again, he's out and Douglas is out in Hollywood.
He's out. Yep. He's out in L.A. Working for United Talent Agency. And so, yeah, I just started making some phone calls to some of the agents that I know, not just Doug, but others saying, listen, you know, I'm kind of kicking the tires, no pun intended, on this parking lot concert idea. Do you have any artists that are interested in that? Because you'll find either they are or they're just flat out against the idea, you know? Okay. And I honestly didn't think, of all the people I spoke to, I thought Doug, being a comedy agent, would be one of the last to have an artist for me because I just didn't see how it would translate for a comedian. Like, the comedian needs that interaction with the audience. They need to hear them laughing. You know, I just never expected a comedy act to want to do it. And Doug was the first one to call me back, and he said, what do you think about Jim Gaffigan? And I said, let's do it. You know, he was also putting him at a drive-in concert in New Jersey, which the Gaffigan did the week before our date. And those are the only two he's done to this point. And, you know, it was, again, it was a lot of fun. It took a lot of figuring out. I think, you know, reading between the lines, I think Jim Gaffigan really enjoyed it as well. It was interesting to see the fans in their cars trying to find a way.
I heard people were like beeping. I wasn't there.
That's how they laughed, I think.
Yeah, I heard people were beeping and like flashing their lights or something.
Beeping their horns and flashing their lights. That was kind of their way of saying, hey, that was funny.
And was his like reaction? Like, how did it go? Like,
he seemed fine with it. I thought in my head, if I was him, I would like the lights better than the beeping.
Sure.
Because my guess is, you know, he's trying to concentrate up there, although he's been doing this forever. He's probably cool as a cucumber up there, but he's got a routine he has to go through. And people are beeping their horn, and you know it could be distracting, I would think.
Yeah.
But that was just their way of interacting with him. But I think he enjoyed it. He actually posted on his Facebook page the next day or 2 days later that he was thinking about doing an entire tour of these, and he wanted to know what his fans thought of it. And he was actually on the Today Show, and they talked about a couple of things he has going on in his career, and they mentioned the drive-through concerts, and they actually showed drone footage from our event on NBC.
Oh, that's cool.
That was pretty cool.
Really cool. So yeah, it sounded like it was a hit.
It went really, really well. Again, it was a lot of work. You know, we knew there wasn't a lot of money to be made or lost on it.
It was something. You guys put together a successful event. It was outdoor. Like I said, I wasn't there, but I know a lot of people that did attend, and everyone said it was just really cool.
It's what we do. You know, we put on live events, and we just got tired of. I think that was really the main motivation was we got tired of seeing event after event fall off the calendar, so we figured at least for one weekend let's put a couple more on.
Yeah. So as GM of, you know, of the Mohegan Sun Arena, you know, what are some behind the scenes things, you know, that you do that I guess like a lot of people, the average person, won't know or see or hear?
Right now, I'm doing a lot of things that I wouldn't normally do because, you know, unfortunately, we're a little shorthanded on, you know, on staff right now with, you know, we have a lot of positions, unfortunately, that are event driven. And if we don't have events, we don't have the positions, unfortunately. So, you know, I've been doing a lot. I've been booking outdoor concerts and I've been cutting the grass and, you know, trimming some trees as well, you know. So, you know, we certainly wear a lot of different hats. But, you know, it's a great job. I enjoy what I do. It's probably not as glamorous or as exciting as people think, but there's a lot of cool moments.
Yeah, like everyone probably thinks you like hang out with the stars backstage, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I haven't met one yet at the arena. You know, I shouldn't say that. You know, we've taken, you know, trade shot photos and whatnot with some. At the Kirby Center, now that I had been there a lot longer, you know, I have more stories, at least as far as artists that I've had a chance to kind of meet or hang out with and stuff. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. Again, it's not as glamorous as people think, but, you know, I always take 30 seconds before or right as a concert begins. And no matter what I'm doing, I stop and I go and I stand in the back, whether it was at the Kirby Center in the back of the auditorium or at the arena on the back of the floor. And I watch the lights go out and I watch the artist come on stage and I listen to the crowd go wild. And it's like, okay, that's my reminder that this is why I did it. Because people don't realize that show has probably been in the works for a year now. You know, from when you go back and you start negotiating with the agent and you try to come to a deal and then you put it on sale and then you try to sell it and all the work that goes into setting up that concert and tearing it down. I mean, when we have, you know, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, they do 2 sold-out shows in one day. They bring in a ton of equipment, lights and sound and stage, more than I've ever seen in person before. And they have it all set up and they tear it down and they're on to the next venue in, you know, like 12, 15 hours. It's unbelievable with 2 concerts sandwiched in between. So it's a lot of work. So I always make sure I take a few minutes to just watch them come on stage. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, why I'm doing what I do.
That's cool. So who is your favorite artist or artists?
Yeah, I think...
Besides
my dad. Well, he's always number one. You know, there's ones that I look back on and I say, wow, I'm excited that I had a chance to book that. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of it goes back to my dad, listening to him. You know, play songs by guys like Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard and, you know, Kris Kristofferson. Like, those are the guys he listened to, and that's therefore what I grew up on. And I had the opportunity to book Willie. I had the opportunity to book Merle right before he passed away. I had an opportunity to book Kris Kristofferson just last year or so. You know, so that's kind of neat for me to be able to say that. You know, but there's others we had David Byrne from the Talking Heads. We had Ringo Starr. No, I can say I booked a Beatle, put him on the Kirby Center stage. So those are the things that I look back on and I kind of smile when it, you know, comes to my time at the Kirby Center. And had a chance to meet Ringo, which is kind of a funny story. You know, we had his agent.
I think you just posted something not long ago.
Yeah,
didn't I?
I think I did.
Saw
it was his 80th
photo.
Birthday.
Yeah.
And so the agent actually came to the event and I wasn't expecting him. And he called me and said, hey, what are you doing? And I said, I'm working. We have Ringo tonight. He's like, yeah, I know. I'm here in your theater right now. And I said, oh, I didn't know you were coming. I go downstairs. I'd never met him before. And he said, yeah. He said, when I put an artist in a building for the first time, I like to be there. So I walk into the Kirby Center lobby. It's the middle of the afternoon. The lights aren't even on yet. It's pitch black. And I see a guy, like a silhouette more or less of a guy standing there. He's got a suit on and a baseball cap. So I start walking closer to him. I introduce myself. And as I get to him, I realize he's wearing a Mets hat. And I'm a huge Mets fan. So, and I'm wearing a Mets t-shirt because I'm not dressed for the show yet, right? So I'm wearing a Mets t-shirt. He's wearing a Mets hat. We start talking about the Mets, of course. And he says, within 30 seconds, he says, I was at game 6 of the 1986 World Series, which, you know, people know anything about baseball or go back that far in you know, to 1986. That's the game where Mookie Wilson hit the ball that went through Bill Buckner's legs, and that's how the Mets won the game. And I said, I can't believe you were there. You know, I still have that game recorded on a VHS tape. I don't even have a VCR to play it in, but I still have the tape. And I said, he said, oh, it was great. He said, you know, when they tied the game on that wild pitch, he said, the place went crazy. And I stopped him and I said, actually, it was a passed ball. It wasn't a wild pitch, but yeah, same difference. He's like, no, it wasn't. It was a wild pitch. So we pull out our phones and we look it up. And sure enough, I was right. So prior to this, now he had made it very clear, no one asks to meet Ringo. No one asks for an autograph from Ringo. He's untouchable, so don't even ask. So we had this conversation. I think I impressed him with my Mets trivia, and he looked at me and he goes, I like you. Do you want to meet Ringo? So
that's really cool.
That's why I got to meet Ringo. And my wife continues to tell me that it's the only time in my life that being a Mets fan has paid off for something
there
positive.
There you go. Yeah. So are you a Swiftie?
What's a Swiftie? So I'm going to say no.
Yeah, no, I had to use a slang. I feel like I've never used that before, but I don't know, I saw Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that what they call them?
I think that's what they call them, yeah.
I am, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm really excited. She's got a new album coming out. She just announced today. So, I am. I'm a big fan. My daughters are as well. I'm pretty sure that's going to be my next big concert ticket purchase.
Okay.
When we get back to doing concerts again, that's who my daughters want to see. I actually have a funny story too. She, when I was at the Bryce Jordan Center, she was there. She was just 18, maybe not even 18 yet.
Wow.
And great story. Most people know she's from the Reading area. Her father went to Penn State. Anyone who came to the Bryce Jordan Center, we would give them a football jersey with their name on the back. So I asked her tour manager. I didn't get a chance to meet her, but she was standing there doing a meet and greet. And I said, we have this. Can we give it to Taylor or do you have to give it to her? He's like, no, you guys can give it to her. No problem. He's like, it'll go over better than it did last night. And I said, oh, no, what happened last night? He said, we were in Ohio State last night and they gave her a jersey. And uh-oh. She refused to pose with it.
That's awesome.
She said, I don't mean to be disrespectful. I appreciate it. I will keep it. But if my father sees me in a photo holding up an Ohio State jersey, he'll disown me. So
that's amazing.
I think that's when I started liking her.
I am now also a Swiftie.
A Swiftie?
I am a Swiftie. So now that you know what a Swiftie is, we're Swifties.
We're Swiftie buddies.
Yeah, definitely. So that's awesome. So you brought this Jeff Dunham All Access Pass with, but it's no longer Jeff Dunham. It's Bill Dunham, and it even has the mole on my face. Did I fail at that? That was really cheesy, wasn't it? So I do have this mole on my face, but Will brought this All Access Pass, and it was Jeff Dunham, but he changed it, and it has a picture of my face on it. And I had to use the word mole in a sentence, and it wasn't too
good. You
worked
it in. It was fine.
It was all right?
I'm proud of you.
Yeah. So Mike Mann picked the word, and all right, well, I tried, and it was kind of an epic fail. You know, if you follow me on social media, you'll see the photo close up of my face that Will photoshopped and put onto the All Access Pass on Jeff Dunham's body.
I'm not as good at it as you are, but
Bill
I tried.
Dunham. Yeah, I became pretty good during the shutdown.
I figured if you're willing to hang out with dummies like me, you should be on a picture with a bunch of dummies.
Yeah, we're dummies and Swifties now.
We're dummies and Swifties. Yeah. I knew I was a dummy. I didn't know I was a Swiftie, but
now I know. And so am I. My wife's going to love me for this because my wife is like the biggest Swiftie.
Is she?
She is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took her to a concert a couple years ago.
You took her to see Taylor Swift?
I did.
That's some big brownie points.
It was cool. We were like third row.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds really cheap.
It was very cheap, and the weather was perfect. It poured rain the entire time.
Of course it did.
It was excellent.
Yes.
So I'm not a huge concert goer, but I gotta say, it was a hell of a show.
Yeah, I'm not a huge, stadium concert goer, and I think it's just my taste in music for whatever reason tends to be more bands that are playing in smaller venues. But my wife and I went to see the Rolling Stones last summer. It was a year ago today, I believe, because I got a Facebook memory. And it was one of those things where, there's been a few artists in the recent years that I keep saying, oh, I want to see them, and I'll see them next time. And Tom Petty was one of them. I didn't catch him on his last tour. He passes away. So I said, okay, not this time. The Stones are coming through. We're going to go. Another cheap one, very cheap ticket. And same thing. It poured pretty much the whole night, and it was still awesome, and I would go again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it was the same thing. It was, it poured, but the show went on, and I think she actually even said that Taylor that it was like one of her favorite shows ever. It was cool, And I mean, I have an appreciation for any artist, whether I like the genre or the music or not. I mean, it's just being that close to an artist like that on stage, there's just something different.
Well,
about
it's not just the music, at least not to me. It's the the production,
it's the show,
the show itself.
It was incredible.
The Rolling Stones had these video walls that were like they looked like they were like 10 stories high. It was incredible.
Yeah, and they had Taylor on this like thing like shooting across this like across. I don't know what it was. It was like this. You probably have seen it, right?
Yeah, yeah,
I feel
yeah.
They put it in like this little like cage, not cage, just probably the wrong word. But like then she like goes on like it's like a zip line like across the across the audience across the crowd. it was really cool.
Yeah, you know when we had her to Bryce Jordan Center again, she was young and she was still very popular. It sold out in like no time, but I mean she couldn't even play a venue that size anymore. It's just way too small for her. But even then, you know, she put on such a great show, and I could imagine, you know. The production itself has only gotten a lot bigger since then. So,
yeah,
you know, my kids are excited to see her. So I think that's our cool. future.
Nice. So, NEPA, what is your favorite thing about this area?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there are so many things. You know, I love the fact that you can, and it drives me crazy. And I tell people this all the time when someone says there's nothing to do around here, you know, because you can go down the road and see, you know, a Penguins game, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins top developmental affiliate. You can go 10 minutes in the other direction and see the Yankees AAA team. My wife actually works for the Rail Riders. She's the GM up at the Rail Riders, and we don't talk about the fact that they're affiliated with the Yankees in my house. You know, but you can go up and you can see a game up there. You have an arena, you have the casino, you have, you know, so many hiking trails and so many state parks, and you have just so much to do around here. You know, the winter, forget about it, right? You can drive 20 minutes any direction and hit a ski resort. So I just love the area in general. And again, like I said earlier, that's why my wife and I moved back here from State College to start a family, because, you know, this is home.
Really cool. Yeah, great answer. I love the answer because I also can't stand when people say there's nothing to do in this area. Yeah. It's like, stop being a Debbie Downer.
I would say I just booked 150 events at the Kirby Center
year. Yeah, like go to some of them, yeah, you know? Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, what's the future look like for the live entertainment business, and or, you know, what, you know, without maybe, you know, I know you probably can't spoil any secrets, but you know, what's happening in the near future?
Yeah, no, there's no secrets to keep right now. Unfortunately, you know, there's just nothing on the books. I feel like, again, everything's kind of falling off the calendar right now, and that'll turn a corner soon. You know, it's just, I think people are, when this first, you know, kind of hit in the middle of March, everything that we had on the schedule between March and May just got pushed back like 8 weeks. I think everyone thought, let's lay low for a few weeks, get this thing under control, and get back to doing what we're used to doing. And it just hasn't happened, obviously, you know. So I think now artists are getting to the point where they're saying, all right, let's stop pushing, like postponing things, because we don't know how far back we're going to have to push it. Let's just cancel the tours, wait for this thing to blow over or whatever. I mean, ultimately, we need a vaccine, right?
Yeah.
And I think we'll start to get back to doing what we used to do. And at that time, you know, you're going to see a ton of artists that want to go back out on the road, because, you know, that's where they make their money. It's different now than it used to be. They used to make all, you know, most of their money on records, and they would go out on tour to support those records. They're not making that money on records
now
anymore.
It's the opposite.
It's the opposite. They need to go on tour, you know, to make that money. And it's tough right now because obviously they can't do that. So I think, you know, when we come back, I think it's going to look different.
When do you think that might happen? Any idea?
Depends on who you ask. I mean, I feel comfortable saying we're not going to have an indoor concert at the arena the rest of this calendar year.
Okay.
You know, maybe I'm wrong. I certainly hope I am. I think we're looking at probably spring of 21, and that's probably even a little optimistic.
Wow. Okay.
You know? Now, look, if we get to the point where the numbers continue to go in the right direction, and maybe they say, okay, you can start doing indoor events at 25% capacity, then all of a sudden I'm back to booking shows I used to book at the Kirby Center, and we're just putting them in the arena so we can put 2,000 people in there and spread them all out and try to keep them safe. You know, maybe there's an in-between like that where we just start doing events but at a smaller capacities. But I think to go back to what we were doing prior to March 12th, I realistically think it's probably spring of 21 at least.
Okay, cool.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. It is what it is. And, you know, I mean, I guess at that time, in the meantime, you know, how can people keep up with, you know, with what you guys are doing, social media, website?
Yeah, we're doing our best to stay relevant. I mean, that's another reason why we did these few events in the parking lot. You know, Steve Paremba is our director of sales and marketing, does such a great job of keeping us current online. You know, he's always coming up with cool things on our social media. So certainly follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, our website is Mohegan Sun Arena, PA. You know, and just keep an eye out, because I'm not sure we're not going to do more of these parking lot concerts. You know, we'll see what happens. We're still kind of letting the dust settle on that to see if it was, you know, kind of worth all of the work that had to go into it. But, you know, weather's going to be nice for a few more months, you know, so maybe we try that again. So just, you know, stay tuned and we'll see what happens. We're doing our best to kind of, like I said earlier, bridge the gap between where we were and where we hope to be.
Cool. Yeah. No, very cool. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. I appreciate you in today and you know, sharing your story. And we're dummies, we're Swifties. I use the word mole very terribly in a sentence. And I think that's
it's
it.
Been we'll a end productive it. Half hour.
Yeah. All right. So Will Beekman, Mohegan Sun Arena on the Stacks podcast. Thanks for joining me today, Will.
Thanks so much, buddy.
If you'd like to learn more about the On the Stacks podcast, be sure to search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. We'll catch you next time on the Stacks.